did this work as a fellow at the Colorado Department of Health. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for attending this talk about the work that we're doing in Colorado to identify and monitor chronic disease disparities using the health disparities calculator. So I'll kind of go through some quick background and significance of why addressing health disparities and monitoring progress towards reducing and eliminating them is important. Our specific project goals, the methods and software that we applied, some results and conclusions, and then where we hope to go next. So I have to confess, a lot of this kind of background information I borrowed from a monograph that's available on National Cancer Institute's website. It's in the same spot where you download the HDCalc software. And basically in 1979, our U.S. Surgeon General first announced the need for national public health goals to start addressing disparities. And then the next year, there were specific objectives that were implemented for reducing mortality for certain chronic diseases, and that was for specific age groups. And then President Clinton gave some attention to the importance of reducing racial and ethnic disparities in 1998, and then we move into the Healthy People 2000 goals, where there was an overarching goal to reduce health disparities, and then they kind of strengthened that language in 2010 to say, you know, the goal is ultimately to eliminate health disparities. And in 2010, that's also the year that the first version of this free software was released. And recently in February, Healthy People released guidance on kind of how to measure progress towards eliminating disparities, and because it's kind of complex, and once you really dive into it, you have a lot of questions. So they were able to kind of say, this is kind of what we recommend. So our goals for this project was, you know, it was mainly a pilot for us. Health disparities are important in Colorado. We've known that, but really on the data side, how to do kind of a deeper dive in measuring them and kind of asking the right questions so that we inform our program work better. So kind of the primary goal was just to understand the summary measures, which I'll get to, the summary measures of disparity and some of the advantages of using them and piloting it with our chronic disease data, and to ultimately get to a place where we kind of have a standard method for measuring chronic disease disparities over time, and then evaluate the statistical significance of those trends. So again, I kind of note authors that are very knowledgeable in this area, and when I started reading, choosing the best method, it's not simple. And the choices that you're going to make to the six categories that are up there, you have to be very thoughtful about the question that you're trying to answer and what you're going to do with the information that comes from your data. So choosing a reference group, sometimes we choose the group with the lowest rate of obesity or the best health condition, but there are other choices. Whether you want to report an absolute measure to kind of describe the impact, you know, how many people you're going to affect, or how many people are affected by that condition, or a relative measure, or if you want to report both, the direction of your indicators. So if you want to describe your indicator in terms of adverse or favorable, pairwise comparisons, I'm sure many of us are familiar with, if you want to stick with that, or use a summary measure, weighting groups equally or weighting them by their share of the population, and then taking advantage of the natural ordering in your data. So ordered groups would would be like income groups. They have a natural ordering, unordered groups. An example is race and ethnicity. So there's different statistical methods that you can apply, of course, based on the nature of your data. So, you know, why use summary measures of disparity? I also may refer to them as disparity indices. You know, I feel like you get a more complete assessment of what's going on in your population versus, you know, in my experience, I'd really just looked at a lot of relative risks and hadn't really kind of thought beyond that. Another advantage is to be able to assess trends. So you're looking at your disparities over time and that component is, as opposed to looking at just a cross section at 1 year in time or one moment in time. And looking at, are disparities getting better? Are they getting worse? Or are they not changing? And then also to kind of simplify your analysis and kind of simplify your communication. If you're looking at obesity among Black, Hispanic, White, maybe, you know, Asian Americans, you have multiple groups to summarize and multiple reference points. So kind of limiting that down into one measure and communicating that trend. And then just how some of the measures are calculated, you're actually using more of your data, more of the information from your data. So you can answer different questions. So getting specifically into the software, the HDCalc software is available for download from National Cancer Institute's website. And it will generate 11 measures of absolute and relative disparity for you. So it's really nice. Once you have kind of cleaned your data, formatted it, you can input it. And the software has pretty good functionality with graphs and tables. And then JoinPoint, we use, it's also free software to assess the trends in the disparity measures. And our data source, our population-based data for chronic disease is typically BRFIS, and we have years of data 1999 to 2014. And that's the HDCalc logo. So the outcomes of interest for us were obesity and current smoking. And then our disparity variables we were interested in were income and race and ethnicity, and you can see that we did dichotomize. We had first started with, I think, 4 categories for race and ethnicity and then 3 categories for income. But just how the data functioned in the HDCalc software, we had to kind of collapse down to stabilize the rates. And then we also combined 2 years of data. So we had 2-year intervals. So this table just is supposed to give you an idea of what some of these measures are. There are more. I'm not presenting all of them. The third one down is a rate ratio that you'll recognize right away, relative measure, the pairwise comparison. Just looking at one group relative to the group with the best rate or the most desirable rate. The two at the top are absolute measures of disparity. And so you have the rate difference just looking at, like, your group, like, your worst group compared to your best group. And then further down you get into the index of disparity and the mean log deviation. And those are really advantageous if you have, you know, pretty big sample sizes and you're able to summarize data for multiple groups over time. And the thing to really get out of this table is the different reference groups as well. Like, some of them, the reference group is, you know, you're benchmarking to the group with the best rate. Or the best prevalence. And then in others, you're kind of benchmarking to like the average health status of the population. Just a different context, you're going to be able to say different things ultimately. And then you can also see in the last column on some of the characteristics, it's pretty simplified, but some of the measures are more appropriate for unordered data, while others you can use your ordered data. Okay, so this is the first of four charts that I'll show you. And this is looking at our outcome current smoking prevalence by race and ethnicity. So the solid orange and light blue lines are the prevalence for the two race groups over time. And then the dashed lines, the dark blue dashed line is the relative measure, the relative summary measure, and the red dashed line is our absolute summary measure. And so when we assess, you know, there are some spikes, but when we assess this in join point, there was not a significant change. So, but that's kind of what your lines will look like in the software. It's kind of difficult sometimes to know what's significant. And now we're going to look at the same outcome, current smoking by income. And here, we did actually find a significant change, a significant increase in disparities, and our relative measure and our absolute measure actually agreed on that, where there's other examples, other cases where you might have a different conclusion with your relative measure than you would with an absolute measure. So I think it's important, and that's what the literature says, kind of look at both. And so this was good that we kind of found the same thing they were agreeing. So now we're going to switch to obesity, our second outcome of interest. And this is by race and ethnicity. Again, the solid lines, the prevalence of obesity for both the non-Hispanic white and then the Hispanic and all other race groups, all other non-white race groups, looks like it's increasing over time. And then we look at our disparity measures, and there's some movement where it looks like there's some variability between the groups and obesity prevalence, but when we tested it in join point, it wasn't significantly changing. And lastly, we look at obesity by income, and we also didn't find a significant trend in the disparity indices. But it does show that there's changes in the distance the groups from each other and their rates over time, but okay, quick recap. We didn't find significant trends in our summary measures of disparity for obesity by race, ethnicity, or income, or current smoking by race, ethnicity. We did record a significant trend in our relative and absolute measures of disparity for current smoking by income. So this was kind of our first like run with using our data in the software. We weren't able to adjust for some confounders like age and different things that could change over time, certainly between 99 and 2014. So, you know, there's some more work to be done in looking at the best way to kind of prepare our data for input into the software. So some strengths of the HTCalc software is that you can do some data management and get any population-based data into the software, and it'll generate your summary measures. And I think it also, you know, it just gets the conversation going about what are the questions we want to answer, you know, who is the audience for this, and so it really gets you kind of talking about health disparities, you know, and the specifics. And then, you know, the work that we're doing in Colorado, like we started it last fall, and then the guidance came out in February. So we kind of feel like we're in alignment with, you know, with what is happening right now too at the national level. So some limitations I kind of touched on is that there is a little bit of difficulty with unstable rates in health disparities calculator, just with small numerator denominators. It's like kind of hard to interpret, but I think based on your data source, it could look very differently. You just have to try it out. And then we did not look at standard error variability around our disparity indices. We had to collapse some years of data and also categories for our disparity measures. And, you know, using BRFIS as our main source for chronic disease data is great in some aspects, but as far as assessing trends, it can be challenging, as many of you know, because questions change, the survey methodology improves, which is good, but it can kind of, you can't have that direct comparison. So, and then there is some difficulty. The measures are hard to explain. They're kind of complicated. And so we are just now going to start getting into communicating the measures more and seeing how that goes over. So next. So we explored this new software, we tried it with our data, and we, you know, we piloted it, and now we'll have more conversations with the programs, and then hopefully develop a kind of a guidance document similar to what Healthy People 2020 did, where we can really consistently define our chronic disease indicators, consistently define the disparity variables like income or race that we're really interested in and what we think that we can really have an impact in, and then kind of get the feedback that we need. So we'll go from there. I'm happy to take any questions.
Hi, thank you. That was really interesting. So I know this was your first pass with the data, and mm-hmm. you acknowledged that collapsing all the racial and ethnic groups together.
You're gonna ask my question.
It's such an important question.
It is.
I was closer to the mic. So do you think that an alternate approach, or are you interested in trying to combine more years of BRFIS data? Do you
yes.
think that would be effective in order to get at that more granular comparison of white to Hispanic or mm-hmm. more specific non-white
right.
groups?
Right. No, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, that was the biggest thing is we wanted to have those, you know, five race groups. You know, we wanted to be able to really say, I think we're not sure. We need to kind of play around with different outcomes and different measures of or different disparity variables, so maybe education, and just kind of see how those work out. I think another thing is we could look at different data sources. To, you know, we might not be able to get at prevalence, but, you know, maybe there's a different story that we need to tell. You could use hospital discharge data. I don't know. I think playing with different data sources is important, too. So, yeah, we'll see.
Hi, Vicki Booth, CDC, and I had to step out of the room for a minute. But did you put up a slide that shows the racial breakdowns in the population of Colorado? Do you have that in your slide deck?
No, I don't. I had to very, you know, limit
some background information,
but it's a very relevant question.
So not quite my question yet.
Uh-huh.
So, in thinking about having the white non-Hispanics compared to all other races combined, so I might suggest that you look at some of the literature about smoking rates and obesity prevalence by race, because mm-hmm. I might suggest that, you know, Asians are going to have lower obesity rates,
yes.
lower smoking rates.
Yes.
And depending on where they are, you might also find that for the smoking in your Hispanic population. So
yes.
what might have happened there
yes.
is those might have averaged out,
right.
and there really
exactly.
could be big disparities that were missed because of the way you combined your
Of course. Race. Oh, of course. Yes.
Well.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. And that is true. You know, that is true in Colorado. Absolutely. Well, when we looked, no, thank you so much for your comments. We looked at how to explain that, and that's exactly what makes sense, you know, when you actually look at that prevalence in those groups. They are bringing, you know, Asian and certain other minority groups might be bringing that obesity prevalence down, while Black and Hispanic, it's high, and it's kind of a wash. So, yes, thank you.
Yeah, Chris Malin, New York State. I've actually had this question for each presentation.
Okay.
But I thought I would ask it now. I have no stake in the county health rankings, but I'm wondering if you or any of the other presenters had considered using the county health rankings data for any of your analysis.
So I'll just say we tend not to use the county health rankings data because it's 7 years of combined BRFIS data. And for us to go to a neighborhood and say, we're going to show you 7 years of combined data and it doesn't reflect the, right, the gentrification, the huge changes with the recession, that doesn't work in our communities.
Okay, that's good. I'm curious. Anybody else?
I use just the map. Otherwise, we use, like, the
RFSS
data.
Okay. Thank you.
I noticed one of your sources is telephone surveys, and I'm wondering how you conduct those. Is it through text messages, or do you actually call the individual?
The BRFIS is a random digit dial telephone survey, and I don't myself, but we have a survey research team, and they call. Oh, BRFIS coordinator. She gave you all the details.
I don't know. So what was your question again?
I was wondering if you're doing it through text messaging, if that's how the surveys are conducted.
No, not yet. We are trying, the CDC at BRFSS are trying to get it on the cell phone because it's a long survey. Right. It's a 20-minute survey. Mm. Like, it's a complex survey, so having 150 questions all on the cell phone as it is, no.
Right.
We've tried web-based. We've done the pilots for web-based. We've done the pilot for mail for people, for non-respondents, to follow up on non-respondents. And in Kentucky, we have also done something like face-to-face.
Right.
But we are still, they're still working on. So there should be a pilot maybe this next year. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No text messaging yet.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Dennis McDermott. I'm from Washington State. And we did very similar analysis a few years ago,
mm-hmm,
looking at a variety of health index summary indices, mm-hmm, of BRFIS data. And the biggest hurdle that we found was we did this wonderful analysis, mm-hmm, and then trying to communicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm, people just, it was just hard to make any sense of it. Have you found the magic phrase to?
No. No, we haven't. And I'm aware of the work that was being done in Washington. And,
oh, okay.
No, we haven't. We're kind of waiting, yeah.
Let's exchange emails and see if we can come up with
sounds
an idea
good
on that one.
Sounds good, thanks.
Is there any more questions for any of the presenters that presented today? Please feel free to go to the next
email. I have just a question that's been floating around my mind for a while and listening to all these presentations. So anybody in the room, jump in. But I did one of my first assignments when I started in my job at the Minnesota Health Department was to present some data related to obesity and diabetes for the Latino community, right? So it was all about disparities. That's what I was asked to do for another colleague, and she came back to me because I asked her, give me feedback, how did it go? And she said, the community said it was all great, we know all this, but it was what do we do and kind of what are our strengths? So I kind of wondered how many of you have experienced that and how do we move to that direction, not just telling communities what they don't have, but what they do have and what they can build on.
No, we really faced that with our outreach piece because we didn't, you know, the state was not going to offer money, was not going to offer, you know, we would offer technical assistance, but really nothing else. It was very community driven. And so when we met with the stakeholders, and I actually wasn't there, but my colleagues met with these community stakeholders, and they definitely were left with kind of like this, okay, what now? Like, that's nice, but what now? And so part of meeting with them, the people that facilitated that really tried to kind of walk them through identifying the resources, identifying stakeholders, and try to kind of help them think through that and kind of identifying resources they have now and what they can do with the resources that they do have. So that, they tried to sort of kind of address that in a way, I guess.
And I have a comment as well. I'm from a local city county health department, so we get asked that question a lot. And I feel like that's something that's coming up a lot, that issue around resiliency and strength. And how do we not keep hearing about the bad, bad, bad all the time? And we have some examples where we're looking at, where we're working in very concentrated geographic areas, and we're being asked to flip those indicators. So where we might usually report on obesity or diabetes, we're being asked to report on the percent without diabetes or the percent that are at healthy weight. And that's tricky, right? Because we're using BRFS data. So just because we can't just take 100 minus the percent who has diabetes to be our not diabetes. So there are some tricky things. And so it's tricky in the community. But I feel like we're also trying to do some efforts to collect some of that resiliency data. Like, we're going to start collecting data on childhood resiliency and family resiliency. And so people are really excited about that.
I know in Virginia, we don't talk about infant mortality anymore. We talk about thriving infants, trying to kind of change the conversation to positive. I think something we still need to explore as epidemiologists, though, what that means. I know for a while they were promoting cancer-free, and we were like, no, people need to get screened, and they need to follow the recommendations. Not everyone is cancer-free, kind of taking the positive of everything. So I think it's something we do need to continue to explore and work together on how we kind of promote things that are good in a community and things that are working, and how we highlight those successes at the same time working on things that, highlighting things that need to be addressed.
So just a couple of comments. There's a large body of literature. In fact, I just looked it up. There's a whole website and resources for asset-based community health assessment and community development. And they've got wonderful tools, talking points, tested messages. And so I would first recommend that you go there. And there's even, they published a book, I'm forgetting the author's name now. So that's one thing that you can do to kind of flip that conversation from the very beginning before you even start the assessment.
Right.
And then, as I mentioned, and I'm just going to plug again, and if you watch the CDC website, you'll see this come out. There's going to be a new initiative called High Five. And then there's going to be one closely aligned to that, High Five, is policies. And then there's going to be one, policies and programs, that include the interventions with the highest evidence levels, where you can see results in 5 years, either by directly measuring outcomes, or where you have a well-accepted causally related surrogate, like meeting the minimum physical activity recommendations and the health benefits that go around that. And that's going to include interventions that directly address the social determinants of health, like housing and poverty, and as well as many others that are PSCs. So two things that should help answer that question,
sure,
in the very short run.
And I was going to agree with that. Like in Michigan, we have, when we did our mapping, we had, for local communities, we have a lot that shows, like, the social determinants of health that might not be very positive, but we also did asset mapping. So we mapped their different types of resources, like champions and gatekeepers, potential physical activity venues, people who in the past had been partnered with to do something and might be interested in doing a new intervention. So when you go back to the local health department or the community organization, you're not going back with all this negative news. You also have, well, here's a starting point. And I know we didn't map out all your possible resources, but we're showing you visually where they are and a starting point. And from there, you can move forward. And that tends to actually, I don't think the local health department's thought in that way in our case, so that was very like positive for them, and that kind of got their brains working.
And just one thing to add to that too, I feel like, I don't know how many of you in the room are involved with your hospital community health needs assessments, but that's the other place. Those hospitals, they have to do this every 3 years. They identify assets, strengths, and resources. So that's a key piece as well.
And they have $84 billion.
And if you couldn't hear that, that was 84 billion with a B.
It doesn't sound.
Hosto Hidai, South Carolina. So the conversation around health disparity is interesting, and I think now we have tools and techniques. Thank you very much for sharing. As soon as I go back to my own home state, I'm going to download this software and play around with it too. So I don't have specific questions about that, but Renee's comment about, so we have focused on health disparity, but the community already know that. What are we going to do? And this conversation is very enriching in our communities to learn that asset mapping, looking at aspects of the work that the community does in order to enable them to do better and so forth. Those are wonderful. So earlier on when health disparities started in 1998 with Bill Clinton initiative, the conversation keep on going in a negative direction. Everybody knew that we are going to look at our differences more so that would perhaps create a more gap between individuals within the community. That conversation, we already know, was very, to some extent, destructive, but at the same time, for those of us who work in with this community, are very important, more the reason to bring the community leaders to the table for the conversation to begin to do something. And I think that's the part of this issue. So recognizing that exists a difference between the two will be the starting. So later on in the 2000 and 2010, actually, the conversation started going into the health equity direction. And the confusions about, well, how do we measure that? And what does that mean? Then now we're hearing there is a different flavor of this health equity concept called healthy opportunity. Or there's a concept like you have to have an opportunity to be healthy. So that's the health equity was the negative, again, you know, to some extent, because if you were to measure it, all the health disparity outcomes are used in order to explain the process, whereas when you focus on opportunity to be healthy, which is health equity concept, it's a good thing. So what are those opportunities for communities to become healthy? Access to care, the determinants of health, all of those issues comes to the forefront of our thinking. So when we're working with the community, it's great to start with understanding where the differences are, but moving beyond that is the most important part. And so how do we go about moving that? You already heard so much. So thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you.